That music means it's time again for a Valley Talk program on this Tuesday, May 14th of 2024. And we're joined today. We're going to head down to the state capitol where we have the Minnesota News Network's Bill Werner on the line. Bill, first of all, I know you're a very busy guy, and we thank you for joining us here this morning.
Hey, it's always good to be with you, Chris. Yeah, it's a busy week, and there's a lot of stuff to talk about, that's for sure.
We're getting down to the end of the session, and do you, in your professional opinion, as somebody that's been covering this for many, many, many years, are they going to get it all done in the regular session?
So. Okay. Oh, yeah, I think so. There's a lot of issues, but we're not really in a do-or-die situation as far as the state budget. I mean, this is not a budget year. There's a supplemental budget, which is a fairly small amount relative to the main budget. Those bills are moving along fairly well. It's the non-budget issues that are a little bit more up in the air, but with those kind of things torpedo a legislative session and force it into special session, probably not. I mean, because, first of all, Democrats control both the House and Senate, right? So there's a level of agreement there, at least on a basic level, on how to proceed.
We've been playing a lot of your cuts that you provide us here in our newscast, and there's been some pretty lengthy and heated arguments on the floor lately.
Oh, yeah, no question about that, and there are some coming up. Very definitely. Where should we start? There's probably about four or five, real prominent issues that we're going to have to deal with in one way, shape, or form before the end of the session, before they end on Monday.
Sure. I'll let you start off. I'll let you lead it off.
Okay, sounds good. Well, let's talk about maybe sports betting first, okay?
Okay.
Because that has been out there for the whole legislative session. Beyond that, it's been percolating, and there are attempts to try to get something to the floor and get something that will pass both the House and Senate, and that is a tough job because you have so many different interests involved. You have the charitable gambling interest. You have the professional sports teams. Ran into Dave St. Peter, the Twins president over there yesterday, coming out of a back room, and he wouldn't tell me what they were talking about, but
you can
maybe
figure
that
it out,
was one of the things. Maybe that was one of the things that they were talking about. Okay, the Vikings certainly have an interest in that. Their lobbyists have been over there. Then you have the Native American tribes, which are concerned about encroachment on their areas, mm-hmm. particularly slots and some of the other types of gambling. You have the charitable gambling interests that are weighing in on this, and you have Minnesota's horse track. There's a bill over there that would prohibit what are called historical horse racing, HHR machines, which the opponents say are just slot machines, and therefore they encroach on the Native American tribe turf. But what happened, interestingly enough, yesterday in the Senate, was that they switched, and it's kind of a fairly routine thing, but it's fairly significant in that they switched the author of that HHR, historical horse racing machine bill, from Senator Kerry Dietzick, Minneapolis Democrat, who is having health problems. She had a recurrence of cancer. And she's not going to be the chief author of it. Instead, Mendota Heights Democrat Matt Klein is. What the Republicans are concerned about is that this may be what's called a vehicle. In other words, that you attach another bill to it and mm-hmm. then drive it. You know what I mean? And that other bill being the full sports betting bill. As a matter of fact, Jordan Rasmussen, the Republican senator from Fergus Falls, he asked Matt Klein, the new sponsor of that historic horse racing bill, if he would guarantee a thorough debate on the floor of the Minnesota Senate. And here is Klein's response.
I'm going to decline to answer Senator Rasmussen's question at this time, but I'd be glad to talk to him offline.
Well, Blaine, Republican Michael Croon keyed in on that.
To short-circuit the process, and I did not hear a denial from Senator Klein that that's the plan, would be very disappointing.
So we're going to have to see, Chris, what happens. You know, I suspect, and this is just kind of a gut feel, so maybe don't quote me on it if we're here on the radio talking about it, but I think that there's so many competing interests that Zach Stevenson, the state representative from Coon Rapids, who is kind of the prime motivator on this, I think, and has done probably most of the legwork in trying to get something that will, if not appeal, at least appease the various interest groups. Mm-hmm. I suspect they're going to just run it up the flagpole and see who salutes, you know what
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
to use a real old term. See if they are able to get it, if they can get it passed. And it might be a long shot. Stevenson, at least earlier, indicated 50-50. Well, who knows what that is now. But I suspect they're going to at least try. And if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, then they'll live for another day and try it again, probably next legislative session. So that's sports betting. Anyway, kind of where we're at on that.
Sure. And the Native tribes, is there more in Minnesota, or do they have maybe more? Well, I know they have a very large lobbying presence at the Capitol.
Sure. Yeah, right.
But you hear these other states, you know, even Washington, D.C., there's sports betting at a lot of these states now, and the professional leagues are behind it.
Right.
Why is it? Is that the reason why it's more difficult? Because there is so much... you have the charitable gaming, you have the native gaming,
yes.
and
yes.
Then you have the horse tracks, and
that's right.
A lot
and,
of people.
And the pro sports teams as well. Yeah, that's why it's so difficult. You've got so many interests, and the interests overlap. Plus, you have, of course, the situation of the Native American tribes that they are legally considered sovereign nations, and so that's a different...
Yeah.
That brings them into a higher level of power in this whole debate, very clearly, because then it makes it a kind of a quasi-federal issue, right? In addition
sure.
to a state issue.
Sure. What are some other topics?
Well, this one is one that is taking a lot of time, and this is a proposed constitutional amendment. That it would be put before voters in 2026, asking voters if they would like to amend the Minnesota Constitution to include an equal rights amendment, plus some abortion related measures. And it is all the abortion related measures are under the what should we say under the umbrella, I guess. Others would say under the guise, the opponents of it, of not discriminating against decisions relating to pregnancy. That's how it would be stated in the question to put to voters. It wouldn't say abortion. It would say pregnancy, non-discrimination of relating to pregnancy decisions. Interestingly enough, now there are a long list of things that is fairly similar to the Human Rights Act, where you're talking about race and various other issues where there's a prohibition against discrimination, and those would be listed in that question put to voters. But the one thing that is not on that list, at least as it currently stands, is religion. And that is causing a lot of talk and debate and a lot of concern on the part of, obviously, members of the faith community, saying, well, that, I mean, all the other things that you have on the list, right? Race, sexual orientation, pregnancy decisions, all the other things that are on the list that you see with human rights amendments. Religion is not on this particular list. And there's going to be likely an amendment on the House floor to put it on the list, and whether that succeeds remains to be seen. And it looks like, Chris, you know, people are wondering why was it not put on there. And the proponents of this amendment say it wasn't put on there because we have these protections in the Minnesota Constitution and the federal Constitution, the state human rights laws, and so on and so forth. And the opponents are not buying that. It may be, based on some indications we're seeing, that the concern is that if you put religion on the list, that then there's a potential ambiguous area legally, right?
Yep.
Because how do you handle then the situation of religious freedom for faith traditions that believe that abortion is a sin? For example, the Catholic Church, which is obviously the most prominent example of that.
Yep.
So that's kind of where the debate is now. Now the backers of this say, well, okay, but let's say we have a situation where we have a hospital that has an affiliation with a church, and many of them do. A lot of hospitals have at least loose affiliations with the Catholic Church, as an example, and certainly other denominations as well. What if a physician there refused to do an emergency procedure, right, that involves the abortion of a fetus? What happens then, right? And that's more of a gray area. So you can see that there's a lot of real basic issues that are coming to the forefront on this. They were going to do this bill last night on the House floor, but it was pretty clear when they spent a lot of time on other bills and it was 6, 7, 8 o'clock at night, and this debate is probably going to be one of those 8-hour debates, I would guess, right?
Yeah.
That they didn't start it, and it looks like they're probably going to do it on Wednesday when the House next has their floor session. But just watch for, that's going to be a battle, that one. And there will be undoubtedly demonstrators, advocates from both sides, as were yesterday outside the House chamber, but they took off when they realized that they weren't going to get to that bill yesterday afternoon or yesterday evening. But I would bet they will be back when the House takes it up, maybe on Wednesday.
And that's to allow a vote of the citizens of the state.
That's correct. Yeah, in 2026, and there's a big debate about, well, how come you're not doing it in 2024? Are you doing it because you're afraid that it might, with a presidential election, pull people in, either pull more Trump people in or pull more more Biden supporters in, right? Assuming that's who the candidates are, they're probably going to be who the candidates are. And all the mix of that, but 2026 is what is at least I think that's when it would be on the ballot.
And if they do pass this, and it's going to be on the ballot in 2026, let's say the Republicans here in the election are able to take control of maybe two of, you know, obviously they won't have governor, but let's say they take control.
Well, they would only have an option for the House, okay. Because the Senate isn't up till 26.
Okay.
So there's really no way they could do it.
They can't change it.
No, because, if they control both chambers, but it's not possible because that's not the way the re-election lines up. You know, the Senate isn't up till 2026, but then in that particular case, would they be able to do it with a Democrat in the governor's office? They'd probably veto any bill, to reverse that, to pull it off the ballot. If they put it on the ballot, it's going to be on the ballot in 2026.
Yep. All right. And so that is, as you said, that'll be a heated topic, and expecting that to be on Wednesday.
Watch that one. Yeah, it looks like the House floor on Wednesday. There's a lot of pressure to get this done, and they just kind of ran out of time because they spent a lot of time on that junk fee bill yesterday, about seven plus hours on that.
Oh, wow.
All the Republicans stood up on that and talked about, you know, how it's going to affect businesses, and that was a long list of folks, and 7 hours later they pushed it into the evening too far and decided no, so... probably Wednesday, but we'll see.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know that there was anybody pro junk fees.
There's the argument on that. You know, what the Republicans are saying is that there are certain groups that are being singled out, as it were, or targeted, right? And others are not, and therefore it's not consistent. And some folks are, and that the legislature is picking winners and losers, basically. That's kind of the argument on that one.
Oh, I guess if either treat everybody the same or don't do it at all.
Well, that's
what
argument.
They're saying.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah.
So what other hot topics?
Okay, and what else have we got here? Well, you want to talk about bonding? we've got that is supposed to be the main task of this even numbered year of legislative session. And it looks the whole thing on that is that the whole operative consideration is that Democrats cannot pass that bill by themselves because a supermajority is required. They need Republican votes. Republicans, because they don't control either the Minnesota House or the Senate or the governor's office, have very little political power or very little leverage other than on that bill, right? And you can... It's looking like they're going to take advantage of that, and, you know, I would be surprised if they didn't. I talked yesterday to Dean Erdahl, who's the lead Republican in the Minnesota House from Grove City, and he's got a lot of history, not only as lead Republican, but as chair of that committee when Republicans control the Minnesota House. And what he told me is that it looks like the Democrats and the Republicans have kind of an agreement on the philosophy of the mix of projects, right? But the dollar amount is still up in the air. It's always number, we've heard numbers all the way from $885 million up to just shy of $1 billion. What he's told me is that they're looking for direction from leadership on that. Well, the reason they probably, this is speculation on my part, okay, or a little bit of a guess, but I think it's probably a reasonable one. I suspect the reason why the leaders have not said this is your number and choose your project to fit this number is because Republicans are sending really strong indications that they want some concessions in other areas of the state supplemental budget, perhaps including some money for rural emergency medical services. That's the one that's gotten a lot of attention. And so then the thing would be Republicans saying, well, look, we want some things in the supplemental budget areas, various areas of this, and then we'll give you the votes that you need. And if they ask for too much, then Democrats have the option of saying, well, we'll maybe use a little bit more of the surplus and pay cash for projects and not borrow quite as much. Therefore, you're going to put Republicans in a pressured situation there. So both sides have negotiating leverage. It's just a matter of how that dance plays out, and that's what we're watching right now. And the bonding bill will likely be one of the last bills out of – they almost always are out of this legislative session, the reason being that regardless of the balance of power, that both parties have leverage on that. In this case, the Republicans have leverage because Democrats – need their help to pass a bonding bill.
Well, and there's no, I think most everybody in the elected office, they agree that there probably isn't a bad project, but it comes down to the importance of each project is what,
right.
And how much you really want to spend. Of course, we know there's a projected deficit here in a couple of years.
Yeah, right. If they, depending on how much of the budget surplus they were to spend, and if the economy goes a certain route, and all these kind of things, it's kind of iffy, but that's always a possibility. This bonding bill seemed a lot of the emphasis is on maintenance of existing and repairs of existing structures. What do they call higher education asset preservation? HEPER is the acronym for it. Talking about roofs and, you know, pipes and electrical and all this kind of stuff in aging buildings in the colleges and universities, the U of M and the Minnesota State system also, the community and technical college system. And infrastructure as far as water and bridges and these kind of things. I won't say there are not new projects in there, but it's more of an emphasis on maintaining what we have. That's probably what you're going to see on any bonding bill that ultimately, hopefully, at least according to what the number of lawmakers want, that hopefully will pass.
Maintaining the buildings that we already have, here at University of Minnesota Crookston, they get some of that HEPR funds. They've had quite a bit of that just to keep the buildings in good shape. And
that's right. And there's very much of a backlog there.
Yeah.
If you go through some university buildings, it's pretty clear. I'm not speaking so much of Crookston.
In the Twin Cities.
More generally, right?
Yeah.
That there are certainly some that need attention.
That's for sure. It's as you would expect, especially with the University of Minnesota and Minneapolis and St. Paul. They have some buildings that have been around for a while, so you have to keep those buildings up, and it's a lot cheaper to keep them up than it is to build a new one.
That's exactly. At some point, the buildings get to the point where the infrastructure is so old that, that you start over in terms of just the installation of new technologies, right? The internet and the web fibers and all these types of things, but that they have to be pretty old before they go that route.
Yeah. And any other topics, Bill?
Well, the gun issue, of course, is one that is out there, and there's been a lot of debate on that. There's a number of provisions out there. There's a safe storage bill that's out there. There's a binary trigger provision that is out there as well, it remains to be seen what's going to happen on these in the closing days of this legislative session. There's a lot of opposition to doing anything in the gun area from Second Amendment rights groups. On the other hand, there's a lot of pressure from the Moms Demand Action and the various anti-gun violence advocates to, in fact, do something. So that's something that's going to play out here in the closing days of the legislative session as well.
All right. And the gun issue, it's I find out more and more. I don't own a gun, I find out more and more about the binary trigger and different things that I never knew. Obviously, not owning a gun, why would I? But there's so much in the gun issue. It's just like everything else we've talked about. There's so much more to it. It's not just black and white. There's a lot of.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
And there's roughly a rural-urban split, although, you know, a person has to acknowledge that the client, the situation is quite a bit different, I think, in greater Minnesota and particularly in the rural areas, right, in terms of the tradition, as it were, as opposed to urban areas where you have gang situations.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously gang is in rural areas, too, but it's much more predominant in the metropolitan area and some of the larger urban centers. It looks like probably the only measure that is actually, and again, this is somewhat speculative, but the indications are that the measure that probably has the best chance of clearing, excuse me, is a measure that would increase penalties for straw purchasing of weapons. In other words, someone buys a firearm for someone who can't possess a firearm, a convicted felon, right? And then it's used in a crime. Penalties they're talking about would even be stiffer if it were used in a crime against a peace officer. That one's going to have almost as close to universal support as you can get, right? That one probably has the straw purchasing component, probably has the best chance of getting through. The binary triggers, the safe storage, much more problematic.
And and the one thing with guns, like a lot of other things, there's rules put in place because the small minority doesn't, most gun owners are very responsible and they take that seriously. But that's always, that's why, and I was talking to Minority Leader Senator Mark Johnson, and he said, that's why we have this big book of laws, because you change laws after a small minority, or maybe just even one or two people.
Oh, sure.
Something.
It's always a case. I mean, one or two people ruin it for everybody.
Yep. Ruin everything.
All the way up and down the down the line. From who gets assassinated, right?
Yep.
And, or just regular folks who are victimized by criminals.
Yep.
It's always a small percentage, and that's kind of the debate here: is do we then potentially affect gun owners' rights to who are responsible people, their Second Amendment rights, to rein in those who are irresponsible? That's always the balance.
Yep.
Always a balance in all the areas of criminal justice.
Nothing is cut and dry. Well, there's a few issues that are probably cut and dry, and those are the ones where you see pretty much unanimous support. And I would think punishing somebody that buys somebody that shouldn't have a gun would be pretty popular, even for a lot of the Republicans.
That was allegedly the situation, right, in the Burnsville shooting, right, of the two officers and the fire department paramedic, a fatal shooting to them, that the weapon that was used was straw purchase.
Yep.
The Fargo shootings, right,
mm-hmm.
The allegations are that was a similar situation. So it's that area, I think, has probably the best chance. That provision probably has the best chance.
Yeah, and that I think most would agree. Yeah, if you're doing something wrong, you should be punished. So.
Well, yeah, for sure, particularly something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Anything else? I know we're running a little long here, but there's so much important stuff to talk about. Anything else that people should know, Bill?
I think those are kind of the main ones. There are going to be other things that are going to come up, watch those for the action, and these folks are going to likely work Saturday and Sunday, which is typical.
Yep.
and Monday is the day when they can have floor session, but they can't pass any bills, so they're going to do farewells to members, which are going to take a fair amount of time. There's a lot of people who are not going to run for re-election.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the layout or the game plan, the rough schedule for the rest of this legislative session.
With the people not running again, do you see some of it is, I know our very own Deb Keel, we talked with her, and she said
right.
it's just time,
sure,
for,
yeah.
time for somebody else. And but
right.
are we seeing maybe some burnout of just the politics, pardon the...
Oh.
It seems to be a little more difficult to be a politician these days than it was 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, it's difficult to know. We could surmise that.
Yeah.
People oftentimes aren't going to acknowledge that.
Sure.
Right? But you can see it. I detect a lot of people simply saying that it is, I've done this for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I've made some trade-offs against it clearly it takes time from family, and other things, and that people have decided. I think if there's, I can't speak for a whole number of lawmakers, but I get the impression that's factoring in that I've done this for a while. It's time to do something else, just like you were saying, Representative Keel told you, time to have someone else do this, and there's plenty of people that are waiting in the wings.
Yeah,
there's no dearth of potential politicians.
Yeah, it is a thankless job. It's so much more into it than those of us outside better than anybody how it works. Oh. But for those of us looking from the outside, it's not as easy as we all think it is.
Oh no, those are very difficult jobs. I mean, you are balancing obviously family commitments, right, with a work commitments because
yep.
many of these lawmakers have jobs, regular jobs, as they like to say, right, outside of the legislature, and then you are balancing that with constituent concerns. And all sorts of community activities that you need to be involved in as an elected representative of the people.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a tough job. There's no question about it. I mean, somebody who wants to, it's not a 9-to-5 or whatever.
No.
Unless it's a 9 a.m. to 5 a.m. the following day.
That's about right. And about 20 parades as well. So.
Yeah, that's exactly right, which are coming up, too, before too long.
They are.
Memorial Day observations, and then your 4th of July parades and everything.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Bill, we always appreciate all of your expertise and your insight to the happenings at the Capitol. We appreciate it. Keep up the great work, and, hopefully the session won't go any later than Monday's the final day, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's probably going to get wrapped up on time. Now watch it. Watch me be wrong. It would be the first time.
Well, it's if you were able to guess what they were going to do, you would be rich and have many books out.
Well, either that or I'd be in jail.
Yeah, one of the two. Yeah. Well, Bill, we appreciate it as always. We thank you and everybody at the Minnesota News Network for keeping us informed of the happenings not only at the Capitol but around the state as well.
Well, it's always good to be with you, and then you all take good care of your part of the state, and you always do a good job.
All right. Thanks, Bill, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yep, good. Yep. Thank you.
Thank you. That's Bill Werner from the Minnesota News Network. We always run a little later with Bill, but so much good stuff from the Capitol, especially with the session wrapping up on Monday. And we'll have more from Bill in the Minnesota News Network during our state news cast that we have at 5 before the hour, and also, of course, on the breakfast time news and all of our newscasts as well and the noontime news. So when we get those state cuts, they all come from the Minnesota News Network, so we appreciate everything they do for us, and especially Bill at the Capitol, keeping us informed of everything going on there.